page 87. Chapter 10. Large crowds began to gather on the village Ilo as soon as the edge had worn off the sun's heat and it was no longer painful on the body. Most communal ceremonies took place at that time of the day, so that even when it was said that a ceremony would begin after the midday meal, everyone understood that it would begin a long time later, when the sun's heat had softened. It was clear from the way the crowd stood or sat that the ceremony was for men. There were many women, but they looked on from the fringe like outsiders. The titled men and elders sat on their stools, waiting for the trials to begin. In front of them was a row of stools on which nobody sat. There were 9 of them. 2 little groups of people stood at a respectable distance beyond the stools. They faced the elders. They were 3 men in one group, and 3 men and 1 woman in the other. The woman was Bafo, and the 3 men with her were her brothers. In the other group were her husband, Uzowulu, and his relatives. Mbafo and her brothers were as still as statues, into whose faces the artist has molded defiance. Uzowulu and his relative, on the other hand, were whispering together. Page 88. It looked like whispering, but they were really talking at the top of their voices. Everybody in the crowd was talking. It was like the market. From a distance, the noise was a deep rumble carried by the wind. An iron gong sounded, setting up a wave of expectation in the crowd. Everyone looked in the direction of the Igwugwu house. "Gome, gome, gome, gome," went the gong, and a powerful flute blew a high-pitched blast. Then came the voices of the Igwugwu, guttural and awesome. The wave struck the women and children, and there was a backward stampede. But it was momentary. They were already far enough where they stood, and there was room for running away if any of the Igwugwu should go towards them. The drum sounded again, and the flute blew. The Igwugwu house was now a pandemonium of quavering voices. "Aru oyim de-de-de-de," filled the air as the spirits of the ancestors, just emerged from the earth, greeted themselves in their esoteric language. The Igwugwu house, into which they emerged, faced the forest, away from the crowd, who saw only its back, with the many-colored patterns and drawings done by specially chosen women at regular intervals. These women never saw the inside of the hut. No woman ever did. They scrubbed and painted the outside walls under the supervision of men. If they imagined what was inside, they kept their imagination to themselves. No woman ever asked questions about the most powerful and the most secret cult in the clan. "Aru oyim de-de-de-de," flew around the dark closed hut like tongues of fire. The ancestral spirits of the clan were abroad. Page 89. The metal gong beat continuously now, and the flute, shrill and powerful, floated on the chaos. And then the Igwugwu appeared. The women and children set up a great shout and took to their heels. It was instinctive. A woman fled as soon as an Igwugwu came in sight. And when, as on that day, 9 of the greatest masked spirits in the clan came out together, it was a terrifying spectacle. Even Bafo took to her heels and had to be restrained by her brothers. Each of the 9 Igwugwu represented a village of the clan. Their leader was called Evil Forest. Smoke poured out of his head. The 9 villages of Umuofia had grown out of the 9 sons of the first father of the clan. Evil Forest represented the village of Umueru, or the children of Eru, who was the oldest of the 9 sons. "Umuofia Kwenu," shouted the leading Igwugwu, pushing the air with his raffia arms. The elders of the clan replied, "Ya." "Umuofia Kwenu, ya." "Umuofia Kwenu, ya." Evil Forest then thrust the pointed end of his rattling staff into the earth, and it began to shake and rattle like something agitating with a metallic life. He took the first of the empty stools, and the eight other Egwu-Gwu began to sit in order of seniority after him. Okonkwo's wives, and perhaps other women as well, might have noticed that the second Egwu-Gwu had the springy walk of Okonkwo. Page 90. And they might also have noticed that Okonkwo was not among the titled men and elders who sat behind the row of Egwu-Gwu. But if they thought these things, they kept them within themselves. The Egwu-Gwu with the springy walk was one of the dead fathers of the clan. He looked terrible with the smoked raffia body, a huge wooden face painted white except for the round, hollow eyes, and the charred teeth that were as big as a man's fingers. On his head were two powerful horns. When all the Egwu-Gwu had sat down, and the sound of the many tiny bells and rattles on their bodies had subsided, Evil Forest addressed the two groups of people facing them. "Uzo-Wulu's body, I salute you," he said. Spirits always addressed humans as bodies. Uzo-Wulu bent down and touched the earth with his right hand as a sign of submission. "Our father, my hand has touched the ground," he said. "Uzo-Wulu's body, do you know me?" asked the spirit. "How can I know you, father? You are beyond our knowledge." Evil Forest then turned to the other group and addressed the eldest of the three brothers. "The body of Odukwe, I greet you," he said. And Odukwe bent down and touched the earth. The hearing then began. Uzo-Wulu stepped forward and presented his case. "That woman standing there is my wife, Mbafo. I married her with my money and my yams. I do not owe my in-laws anything. I owe them no yams. I owe them no cocoa yams. One morning, three of them came to my house, beat me up, and took my wife and children away." Page 91. This happened in the rainy season. "I have waited in vain for my wife to return. At last I went to my in-laws and said to them, 'You have taken back your sister. I did not send her away. You yourselves took her. The law of the clan is that you should return her bride price.' But my wife's brothers said they had nothing to tell me. So I have brought the matter to the fathers of the clan. My case is finished. I salute you." "Your words are good," said the leader of the Egwu-Gwu. "Let us hear Odukwe. His words may also be good." Odukwe was short and thick-set. He stepped forward, saluted the spirits, and began his story. "My in-law has told you that we went to his house, beat him up, and took our sister and her children away. All that is true. He told you that he came to take back her bride price, and we refused to give it to him. That also is true. My in-law, Uzo-Wulu, is a beast. My sister lived with him for 9 years. During those years, no single day passed in the sky without his beating the woman. We have tried to settle their quarrels time without number, and on each occasion, Uzo-Wulu was guilty." "It is a lie," Uzo-Wulu shouted. 2 years ago," continued Odukwe, "when she was pregnant, he beat her until she miscarried. It is a lie. She miscarried after she had gone to sleep with her lover." "Uzo-Wulu's body, I salute you," said Evil Forest, silencing him. "What kind of lover sleeps with a pregnant woman?" There was a loud murmur of approbation from the crowd. Odukwe continued. Page 92. "Last year, when my sister was recovering from an illness, he beat her again, so that if the neighbors had not gone in to save her, she would have been killed. We heard of it, and did as you have been told. The law of Umuofia is that if a woman runs away from her husband, her bride price is returned. But in this case, she ran away to save her life. Her two children belong to Uzo-Wulu. We do not dispute it, but they are too young to leave their mother. If, in the other hand, Uzowulu should recover from his madness and come in the proper way to beg his wife to return, she will do so on the understanding that if he ever beats her again, we shall cut off his genitals for him. The crowd roared with laughter. Evil Forest rose to his feet, and order was immediately restored. A steady cloud of smoke rose from his head. He sat down again and called two witnesses. They were both Uzowulu's neighbors, and they agreed about the beating. Evil Forest then stood up, pulled out his staff, and thrust it into the earth again. He ran a few steps in the direction of the women. They all fled in terror, only to return to their places almost immediately. The nine Egwugwu then went away to consult together in their house. They were silent for a long time. Then the metal gong sounded, and the flute was blown. The Egwugwu had emerged once again from their underground home. They saluted one another, and then reappeared on the Ilo. Umuofia Kwenu, roared Evil Forest, facing the elders and grandees of the clan. Ya, replied the thunderous crowd. Then silence descended from the sky and swallowed the noise. Page 93. Evil Forest began to speak, and all the while he spoke, everyone was silent. The eight other Egwugwu were as still as statues. We have heard both sides of the case, said Evil Forest. Our duty is not to blame this man or to praise that, but to settle the dispute. He turned to Uzowulu's group and allowed a short pause. Uzowulu's body, I salute you, he said. Our father, my hand has touched the ground, replied Uzowulu, touching the earth. Uzowulu's body, do you know me? How can I know you, father? You are beyond our knowledge, Uzowulu replied. I am Evil Forest. I kill a man on the day that his life is sweetest to him. That is true, replied Uzowulu. Go to your in-laws with a pot of wine, and beg your wife to return to you. It is not bravery when a man fights with a woman. He turned to Odukwe and allowed a brief pause. Odukwe's body, I greet you, he said. My hand is on the ground, replied Odukwe. Do you know me? No man can know you, replied Odukwe. I am Evil Forest. I am dry meat that fills the mouth. I am fire that burns without faggots. If your in-law brings wine to you, let your sister go with him. I salute you. He pulled his staff from the hard earth and thrust it back. Umuofia Kwenu, he roared, and the crowd answered. Page 94. I don't know why such a trifle should come before the Egwugwu, said one elder to another. Don't you know what kind of man Uzowulu is? He will not listen to any other decision, replied the other. As they spoke, two other groups of people had replaced the first before the Egwugwu, and a great land case began. Page 95, Chapter 11. The night was impenetrably dark. The moon had been rising later and later every night, until now it was seen only at dawn. And whenever the moon forsook evening and rose at cockcrow, the nights were as black as charcoal. Izinma and her mother sat on a mat on the floor after their supper of yam fufu and bitter leaf soup. A palm oil lamp gave out yellowish light. Without it, it would have been impossible to eat. One could not have known where one's mouth was in the darkness of that night. There was an oil lamp in all the four huts on Okonkwo's compound, and each hut, seen from the others, looked like the soft eye of yellow half-light set in the solid massiveness of night. The world was silent, except for the shrill cry of insects, which was part of the night, and the sound of wooden mortar and pestle, as Wayeke pounded her fufu. Wayeke lived four compounds away, and she was notorious for her late cooking. Every woman in the neighborhood knew the sound of Wayeke's mortar and pestle. It was also part of the night. Okonkwo had eaten from his wife's dishes and was now reclining with his back against the wall. Page 96. He searched his bag and brought out his snuff bottle.